Welcome to the Israel Daily News Podcast. I'm your host, Shanna Fold, and I'm here to get you caught up quickly. I've got some top stories for you today from Israel, and guess what? You're listening, so you're already on top of your game. Survive and thrive, people, and knowledge is the best weapon. Today is Monday, August 31st, 2026 in the Gregorian calendar and the 18th of Elul, 5786 in the Hebrew calendar. Now, let's get to the news. The clock on that 60-day U.S.-Iran understanding, the memorandum of understanding that we were talking about last week, not only ran out, but now the U.S. is doing something about it. Sunday, American forces struck two Iranian rocket launchers armed with sea mines on Larak Island, right in the Strait of Hormuz, after the IRGC, the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps, was spotted prepping to fire on shipping lanes out there on the Strait. It's the first U.S. strike on Iran in weeks, and Iran's Revolutionary Guard Corps is already vowing to respond. Iranian state media reported that witnesses heard those explosions loud and clear. Iran's economy, meanwhile, is reportedly sinking further, with the Strait of Hormuz effectively shut for business. Yikes. That's not good for anyone. So again, this is about the MOU. It ran out. The MOU was pausing fighting between the U.S. and Iran and the other parts of the region that were involved in the fallout from this. That was supposed to be a 60-day pause. The memorandum of understanding ran out. There were no real effective negotiations that came through. And so we don't really know where things are going. The hope was that the MOU would lead to a longer ceasefire and kind of an end to things, but nothing really came out of it. So it looks like fighting is now back on the table. Israeli politics are heating up ahead of the October 27th election. Prime Minister Netanyahu is telling the public that he's worried Ofer Winter's new People of Israel party could tank his own coalition, telling right-wing Israeli news channel 14 that it risks wasting votes or pushing one of his allies below the electoral threshold. Netanyahu's message to Ofer Winter, who's now emerging in the political game, was blunt. Let's meet, let's talk immediately. Winter is not backing down, though. He says his party answers to no one except for the people of Israel. And he's using the moment to blast the government's handling of Hamas, Gaza aid, and Haredi enlistment. This comes as Netanyahu has already failed to merge Ben-Gvir's Otzma Yehudit party with Smotrich's Religious Zionism Party ahead of the September 8th deadline to finalize the party slates. I know that this can be kind of challenging to understand, but the idea is that the right wing and the left wing, a lot of the times they need to band together because the idea is to get over the halfway point. There's 120 members of Knesset, so you need more than 61 to have a majority, and it means that the right-wing parties need to band together and form a coalition so that once they get into government, they'll actually be able to push forward legislation and get block votes on things so that things can move forward. The numbers explain the panic. A new Khan poll puts Netanyahu's coalition at just 48 seats, 52 even if Winter was on board, and neither of those numbers are anywhere close to the 61 that Netanyahu needs for his right-wing coalition to band together and move ahead through the season. Ofer Winter is the former IDF general who commanded the combat brigade known as Givati in Hebrew. It's a very known brigade. And that was during the 2014 Gaza War. His party now is running, and their title is Amcha Israel, or People of Israel. That's the name of their party. It's a hardline, security-first nationalist party that opposes a Palestinian state, backs Palestinian emigration from Gaza, and pushes to draft Haredi or ultra-Orthodox men into the army while positioning itself as independent of and more competent than the current right-wing establishment that is already in place. So people are already talking about Ofer Winter. He's really known in the military sphere. Now he's really coming forward in politics. So we're going to keep you up to date on that story. You may know that through Tribe Tel Aviv, the nonprofit organization that I'm programming events for, I've been running an election series, and we've been bringing in a lot of the different parties. We also interviewed Sharon Haskell of her new party, which is called Israel First, and we just did that about a week ago. So check out all of our content on the election. You can find it right here on Israel Daily News. 16 Givati Brigade soldiers refused to board an armored vehicle from a Gaza mission because a female paramedic was on board of that armored vehicle. And that refusal got the whole mission scrapped. I'll explain more in a bit, so just hold on. Five of the ringleaders of the no-go onto this armored vehicle got 10 days in military jail, with two facing extra committees before they're allowed back into combat. The other 11 soldiers got 5 days of military jail each. Finance Minister Bezalel Smotrich jumped to their defense on X, saying they have the full backing of religious rabbis, and he accused the IDF of antagonizing the public that serves and contributes the most, end quote. That did not go over well with the opposition. Opposition leader Gadi Eisenkot accused Smotrich of encouraging outright refusal to obey military orders. Many Orthodox Jews are meant to keep a separation from women who are not their sisters or their wives or family members. This is my little explanation to you. If it seems crazy that a group of Givati combat soldiers would refuse to get into a vehicle because there was a woman paramedic in it, this is my explainer. It can be really challenging for Orthodox soldiers to work alongside women because of those restrictions. And in recent years, this issue has become more prevalent, both with the pressure of the Orthodox community to serve, from the whole country pressuring the Orthodox community to step up and serve, and with more Orthodox people stepping forward on their own accord because they would like to participate in the army. And because of all of this forward motion, provisions have been made so that the community would be able to serve without sacrificing their religious beliefs and traditions. Now, worth noting, however, the Rotem Battalion, which we are referencing within the Givati Brigade here, is not an Orthodox or Haredi, that's the Hebrew word, unit. So under IDF protocol, these soldiers were required to serve alongside women in the first place. It's really these special units that the Orthodox men are joining that they have certain provisions and certain agreements before they get in, that they won't need to serve alongside women, that they will, you know, have the proper provisions needed for them to live their fully Orthodox life. So that's why this is coming up. And I have to tell you, it is a top issue, if not the top priority, for all of these parties that I've been interviewing, political parties. At the top of the agenda, all of these parties are referencing the Haredi draft, the Haredi conscription into the army. In my opinion, I don't even think enough other topics are being discussed because this is just such a hot button issue right now. And of course, it's because of all of the soldiers that have gone into the army and needed to serve the country in the last 3 years since October 7th, since war broke out. We've lost a lot of people. We've needed more forces. And so more manpower has been needed and is being called upon. And this has been a very difficult time. 2 years ago today, the IDF recovered the bodies of six hostages murdered in a Hamas tunnel in Gaza. Hirsch Goldberg Polin, who was an American also, Eden Yerushalmi, Carmel Gat, Ori Danino, Alex Lubanov, and Almog Sarusi. We reported on the heartbreaking footage recovered from that tunnel, showing the six of them marking Hanukkah together with makeshift candles in a dark tunnel underground. They did everything that they could do to hold on to hope and hold on to the Jewish tradition. All six were taken alive from the Nova Music Festival on October 7th, and they were murdered by their captors as Israeli troops closed in. On Monday, which is today, protesters gathered outside of Netanyahu's Jerusalem residence to mark this solemn anniversary, holding a banner reading, "We will not forget they could have returned alive," end quote. That's what it said. The demand goes beyond memory, though. they don't want just these six young people to be remembered. They want a formal state commission of inquiry into October 7th and everything that led up to that day in which 1,200 innocent individuals were killed and 250 taken into Gaza as hostages. Now, this inquiry is something that Netanyahu's government has continued to resist, or at least resist permitting it to happen independently of government oversight, which is what the people want. 2 years later, for families like these, the grief and the fight for answers have not moved ahead. I remember the day that the news came out that these six souls were killed by Hamas terrorists. So many Jews and non-Jews, people around the world had been praying and expecting this specific crew to come home, especially because we had heard reports from other hostages that they were alive and that they had been seen in Gaza tunnels. It was particularly crushing to find that they had been killed ahead of what Hamas understood to be an IDF invasion. The Israeli army had been moving closer to finding them. And before they could do it, Hamas shot them all dead in this tunnel. I remember seeing photos all over Tel Aviv of Eden Yerushalmi and hoping this little young 20-something-year-old girl would come home. She was 24 years old. The messages from Hirsch Goldberg Polin's parents, them shouting over the border with other mothers with megaphones, hoping to be heard from the border into Gaza, hoping that their kids would hear them crying out and calling their names, speaking on TV, which we know that a lot of hostages actually did get exposed to that Israeli television and the American television and the international reports with their parents and siblings and friends on TV. And it helped them continue holding on for life. And of course, living hostages today, like Or Levy, who repeated the line popularized by Viktor Frankl in his book, Man's Search for Meaning, he who has a why to live can bear almost any how. Now, this line was something that Hirsch Goldberg Polin repeated in captivity, which helped other hostages survive. Today, Or Levy has that tattooed on his arm. And in our generation, that line has now been made popular by Hirsch Goldberg Polin. Even though this line is a very old line, it's become really, you know, you say that line and I think of Hirsch Goldberg Polin. I also interviewed a relative of Carmel Gott for Tribe Tel Aviv, the nonprofit organization. She had been working tirelessly in Washington trying to get her out. And she helped other hostages because of her work. This ordeal leaves a stain on all of our hearts. Let's honor those 2 years today. Haaretz reports that senior IDF officials increasingly see a real risk of Palestinians arming themselves and firing back at settlers, at Jewish settlers. It echoes what Central Command Chief Major General Avi Bluth repeatedly has told Netanyahu directly in a closed-door briefing. He says, there is one match that could ignite everything in an instant. Nationalist crime. Bluth says Palestinian terrorism has actually dropped over the past 2 years, but settler violence is now the biggest threat to stability, and it's pulling IDF resources away from counterterrorism to police that are needed to show up and manage those violent scuffles between Palestinians and their Jewish neighbors in the West Bank or Judea and Samaria, however you call it. When Netanyahu reportedly pressed IDF Chief of Staff Eyal Zamir on the contingency plan, if this disputed territory would erupt, Zamir seems to not have had a plan at the ready. Now, I always like to give a little context. The West Bank is what the West calls it. Judea and Samaria is what Jews and people here in the East call it. Judea and Samaria is the heartland of the Jewish people. This is real Israel, okay? This is, if you look at the Bible, this is where Israel started. This was where the capital of Israel was for 400 years before Jerusalem became the capital. And this is really the heartland of the Jewish people. And Jews don't want to leave the area because they feel And history has shown that if they leave the area, they lose the claim to the land of Israel. So a lot of people they're called settlers in the West and in international media, depending on who you ask. This is disputed territory. The West Bank is disputed territory. And so we also understand that this circle of violence is exactly like that. It's a circle of violence. It's Jewish extremists going and standing outside of Palestinian homes, threatening them. And it's Palestinians going into Jewish communities and lighting their houses on fire as well. And it's a cycle of violence that clearly the IDF chief of staff needs to come up with a plan to end, because as we know, whenever we come into the high holidays, which are just about a week and a half away, Rosh Hashanah is two Fridays from now, we see escalated violence. And in a story that had people talking, Shas Party spiritual leader Rabbi Yitzchak Yosef tore International Security Minister Itamar Ben-Gvir over his repeated visits to the Temple Mount, warning that anyone who goes will be punished and could, quote, die in excruciating agony. Now, of course, that's from a biblical religious ideology sense, not because they're going to be penalized by the state of Israel. Those are strong words. Rabbi Yosef says Jewish law forbids the visits and questioned whether Ben-Gvir even has the religious authority to say otherwise. Now, it's very contentious to go up onto the Temple Mount. Some Jews say that we should go there because this is where Abraham, the first Jew noted in Jewish history, almost sacrificed his son Isaac. And that was said to have happened on the Temple Mount. And this is where the Al-Aqsa Mosque is built on top of. So it's the third most religious site for Islam, and it's the first most important site for Jews. However, Jews don't go there because it's pretty controversial whether we are supposed to or not, and it also antagonizes the Muslims when we go. I want to thank all of you for your interest in Israeli affairs. Israeli politics are world politics. I also want to thank all of you who personally finance and fund the Israel Daily News podcast with monthly contributions. You can continue to contribute or make a monthly or make a one-time donation through our website, israeldailynews.org. Your support helps keep our independent journalism alive and growing. You can also follow Israel Daily News across social media on Instagram, TikTok, X, and LinkedIn at israeldaily.news or Israel Podcast on X. You can also follow my personal page at Shanna Fold. My name has two N's in it, and I'm very sensitive about that. Today, I'm excited to support a new Jewish female-owned business called Bala Glitz. Bala Glitz is joyful jewelry with a signature twist. The owner, Mrs. Jillian Boxer, says her dainty, elevated charms celebrate Jewish life, mitzvot, and meaning, all in gold and glitz. I want to note that I was actually super impressed because it was her husband who thought to get the business a little play on the Israel Daily News podcast, and he reached out and asked me if I'd wear some jewelry made by his wife. And now I'm wearing these awesome flower earrings, and I love them. I absolutely love them. So they sent those over to me, and I said I'd be happy to wear them at the Israel Daily News. That's a power couple right there, if you ask me. And I'm happy to bring them on the air. The season of gifting is upon us. Rosh Hashanah is just weeks away on September 13th. And if you're looking to send some honey from the Holy Land, now is your chance. Head over to the hasodstore.com for gift boxes. Also special experiences, which is new in Israel, and some of my personal favorite treats for the holiday. I have them listed in the blog section of hasodstore.com with an Israel Daily News picture on it so that you can't miss it. We're red, white, and blue. There's a picture of my face. I have tested everything that I'm vouching for. I have tested the coffee, the soaps, the teas. I love all of this stuff, and it's all local from Israel. So if you want to send a local from Israel box and support Israeli businesses, go to hasodstore.com. That's H-A-S-O-D. Store, store.com, and you'll get 10% off your order of $100. Make sure to put that coupon code in, IDN10. IDN10. You'll get 10% off of your order, and you're going to make a contribution to support Israel Daily News at the same time. It's an Israeli company, but it ships effortlessly to the United States, to Israel, and countries around the world. Great shipping services. And just know that every purchase supports the Israel Daily News. Chag Sameach, Shana Tova, Happy New Year. Now let's end on some positive news. Israel just landed its biggest defense export deal ever. Israel and Greece, I just returned from Greece a few weeks ago, signed a $3.5 billion agreement on Monday for a full multi-layered missile defense system nicknamed Achilles Shield. We're talking David's Sling and Spider from Rafael, the Barak MX from Israel Aerospace Industries, plus a separate 26 million euro deal for Rafael's drone dome system. It's the first time Israel has ever sold another country a complete top-to-bottom defense array covering everything from ballistic missiles to drones, built on lessons from Israel's own multi-front war, a seven-front war little Israel has been battling for 3 years. Defense Minister Israel Katz calls it proof of the depth of trust built between the two countries, that being Greece and Israel. And after the year Israel has had, watching that trust turn into the biggest defense deal in history is a pretty big achievement. Greece already bought $739 million worth of Israeli rocket artillery last year in 2025. And Finland just quietly extended its own defense agreement with Israel through 2034. So add that to the win column too. I find it funny that many of these countries, both of these countries actually, have been afraid to support Israel out loud, and they have quite anti-Semitic individuals, but they're pretty happy to get their borders secured with Israeli technology. I guess the owners of these defense companies that I just mentioned are laughing all the way to the bank. All right. Well, that is it for today's show. Today is Monday, August 31st, 2026. Tel Aviv has a low of 24 degrees Celsius and a high of 32 degrees. That's 76 degrees Fahrenheit for the low, going up to 89 degrees for the high. We are everywhere. Don't forget to sign up to our Israel Weekly News Wrap. That's the newsletter with the top five stories coming out of Israel from throughout the week, plus a personal note from me at the top. You can sign up for that at israeldailynews.org. Scroll down to the bottom and drop your email address in. I want to thank our news writer, Perry Schwartz, who's been on top of the updates and fact-checking our reports, and our editor and associate producer, Lori May. Have a great and productive day and an excellent week. Shavua Tov, everyone.